Planning Commission public hearing Wednesday, November 17th at 6:03 p.m. We will establish a quorum at this time, and starting from my immediate left.
Commissioner Virginia Klassen.
Commissioner John Thomas.
Commissioner Gloria Fleming.
Commissioner Linda Maggard.
We have a quorum, and our staff is present.
Deborah McMahon, DMC Consulting Services.
And James Lewis with Portera.
And secretary who is present, Patty Morgan. Thank you, Patty. Okay, at this time we'll have a Pledge of Allegiance. And Deborah, can we please get us into that?
Certainly.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Before we begin the public hearing, I will read a statement for legislative matters, and this is how the basically the hearings will take place. Listen carefully. I'll try to explain this so that everybody understands it, including myself. Number one, the Planning Commission will declare ex parte communications, including site visits, as well as actual and potential conflicts of interest. Those in attendance will have an opportunity to challenge the disclosures. We'll come back and do that. Remind me, Vice Chair, if I forget. A planning staff representative will outline the application and the approval criteria. This information is also outlined in the staff report, which is available to the public. The Planning Commission will hear testimony, receive evidence, and consider the testimony, evidence, and information already submitted into the record. Testimony and evidence at these hearings must be directed toward the criteria set forth in the notice of the hearing and listed in the respective staff report. In addition, testimony may be directed to any other criteria in the comprehensive land use plan of the city or land use regulations which any person believes applies. The applicant, City of Alpine, has the burden of proving that his or her application meets all of the applicable criteria. Failure on the part of any person to raise an issue with sufficient specificity, say that really fast, to afford the Planning Commission and parties to this proceeding an opportunity to respond to the issues precludes appeal to Land Use Board of Appeals on that issue. It means that if you have something, you say it tonight or forever hold your peace. Basically what that's saying. Failure of the applicant to raise constitutional or other issues relating to conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the local government or its designee to respond to the issue precludes an action for damages in circuit court. Each hearing will be conducted in the following order. The staff will summarize the issues raised by the application and review the applicable criteria. The applicant will then have the opportunity to make a presentation and offer testimony and evidence. Other persons supporting the application will then be given an opportunity to present testimony. Next, opponents will then be given a chance to make a presentation. After both proponents and opponents have made a presentation, the applicant will be allowed to make a rebuttal presentation. The Planning Commission may offer an opportunity for opponents to respond to the applicant's rebuttal. Of course, this has to do with how much time we have tonight. At the conclusion of this hearing, the staff will be afforded an opportunity to make any closing comments. The Planning Commission may limit the time period for presentation. We could do that right now if someone wants to take a note before we declare any ex parte contacts and conflicts of interest. Do we want to limit our time limit for the applicant and any opponents? We have 10 signed up.
want to ask for a show of hands of people who plan to testify tonight, and that'll give you a good idea.
You got 10 show up. Of those 10, how many would like to testify? Show of hands. 1, 2?
Three.
Maybe. 3 or 4, possibly 5. We could go maybe as long as 5 minutes. I mean, this is a pretty short crowd. You know, that's pretty generous. You want to limit to 5 minutes then? And everybody, you guys are lucky because I don't have my little clock right here right now. Usually I'm a 21-year veteran in the Navy. I love my little clock there, but I don't have it here, so you guys can take advantage of me. All right, now, how much time on the... Oh, there's a sign-up sheet for public comment.
If people haven't already signed up, they could sign up again here before they speak.
Okay. Also, we'd like to put a time limit on the applicant and the opponent.
For this matter, because it's a legislative matter where your staff is working with you, you don't have to deal with that because our report is going to be as brief as possible to get the job done.
So it's about a half hour or...
Or less, because the goal tonight is to hear from the public and get their comments.
Okay. And just so we're organized here and everybody's on the same page, that's all. Now, at this time, we will declare any ex parte contacts and any potential conflicts of interest with the commission. Do you want to start on my left, Virginia?
I don't have any. I don't know if any contact is that I've read it. So, I mean, I don't have any conflict of interest right now.
The most important thing is that you feel through this process that you can review the materials in a fair and balanced manner without any bias that would give you personal benefit or perceived benefit. Or if you owned a property that was within the city that could benefit from this process, you should declare that, etc. Did I miss anything?
No. It's just in the ex parte contact is not as applicable as what Deborah just said because it is a legislative matter. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to be outside of this hearing room tonight to talk to the public about what they want.
Okay.
No, and I'll go next. And again, I have been personally involved with the with all of these ordinances, working with staff to develop them over the course of several months. And don't have any conflict of interest. I own 2 properties within the city limits. One is at 51415 Highway 97, the old Pine Realty A-frame, and I own a property that's at 53279, or maybe it's 52379, Huntington Road, which is a property called, there's a little sign out there that says, Crosswood, Pioneer Crossing, that's a little building right there. That's my 2 properties I own. And so, if I'm going to, hopefully in the future, I benefit from some of my efforts. But I don't see anything short term. Okay, next.
Well, Fleming, and I have no property, and I'm retired, so... I'm just interested in helping the city get these ordinances put together.
And I'm Linda Maggard, and I do live in the city limits, and I do have property that is being rezoned, not from my doing, just because it was a big parcel, and they don't want a farm in the city limits.
Hmm. And you recused yourself on that, too.
I did.
So,
yeah.
Okay. At this time, we will begin the public hearing.
Would you like a staff report first?
And I would like a staff report. It says right here. Thank you. Deborah McMahon.
What I'd like to do is give you a broad overview of the issues before us so that everybody understands where we started from. And the city council adopted a comprehensive plan that was the product of a public participation process, much like this. And that comprehensive plan is something that contains rules and policies. And the codes that you see before you tonight implement those goals and policies. So where we have broad-ranging general statements in the comprehensive plan about how the community wants to look, its livability standards, how we want to deal with the environment and economic development, all of those things need codes to make sure that those things happen. And so tonight, what you're hearing in this public hearing is a general overview of a draft procedures ordinance, which will give the city kind of a recipe and menu of how they will process land use applications, and then a subdivision or a land division ordinance that helps the city set guidelines for how land is split up in the community. So you'll have partitions and subdivisions and lot line adjustments, anything having to do with the shape of land. And then we have a sign code. Some of you here tonight may be very interested in the sign code. Those seem to get a lot of interest. And that's one thing that the comprehensive plan was very interested in, which was how do we make our community look better? And managing the sign code is just one of those elements that can help the community with its livability standards. The next code is the lighting ordinance. And the Planning Commission has taken a very strong view of making sure that there's night sky protection, that lighting is shielded and pointed down so that properties do not have to suffer from glare from other properties. And so those things are in the sign, in the lighting code. And then we have an SDC, or Systems Development Charge Mitigation Framework, which is language about how, if we had an SDC in place, how would it be implemented. And so six codes are before you tonight, including some MAC elements that we'll talk about later on, showing how the zoning would occur within the community. And you'll see behind you a big zoning map to the left. Isn't that our right one?
No, one on the right.
Oh, one on the right. I'm sorry.
There's two right there.
It says the Pine zoning map. It's the more colorful one that gives you an idea of what's being proposed in terms of zoning. It's not a lot different than the comprehensive plan map, but what was clear is that the Planning Commission felt the easiest thing to administer for its citizens is one map, not a two-map system, but a single-map system. And that makes sure that everybody understands in an easy fashion what their zoning is on their individual properties. So we have been going through for the, how many months now? Past 6 months, I guess. Each one of these six ordinances, refining them, crafting them, and making them available to the public. We've been making changes all the way up to tonight to make sure that comments as they come in are reflected in the language. And what we'd like to hear tonight from the public are any comments that you have regarding these codes. If the Planning Commission wants more detail on the individual codes, we can provide that, but we think it's absolutely critical that the public has a chance to voice its concerns. And I'll leave it there in case you want more.
No, that's fine. Keep in mind, try to limit 5 minutes, and also just for the purposes of a little bit of organization, let's start with proponents first. Don't everybody jump up at once and start a stampede.
What did you mean by proponents?
Proponents of anything good that they see in the land use policies that we have for the fine. And the staff may continue to speak on the good qualities of zoning ordinances. Maybe we'll go right to opponents.
A person doesn't have to have a particular position.
A lot of times it's just questions at this point. Typically, I bet that most people have out there.
Let's just start with questions.
Yeah, well, I got one thing I want to bring up.
Good.
Okay. We were talking earlier about this.
Oh, I'm sorry. Your
mic shields.
Okay.
Shields.
We were talking earlier about this high density that these buildings are close together. My concern is if we get one of those winters where we have 3-4 feet of snow, we've got buildings 9 feet apart and the snow sliding off those roofs down in between the two of them. And then we have these cul-de-sacs. We earn money plowing snow, so I shouldn't be arguing this, but when you have these cul-de-sacs, there's no place to push the snow. There's no place to get rid of it. So the city is going to incur huge expenses with having to load and haul that snow out and finding a place to put it.
Snow removal and concerns about...
And if you remember, this is an issue that came up at the Planning Commission. Our setbacks are more generous than normal because of the need to store snow for long periods of time.
Yeah, a few years ago we did a subdivision on William Cross down here, William Cross and Hancock, I think it is, and some of those buildings are only 9 feet apart.
Yep. Wheeler Ranch?
Yeah, I think it's right on the corner of Hancock and William Cross. Yeah, there's a 1.9 acre lot, and it's got a street with a cul-de-sac and 11 lots. And if we get a
cul-de-sac with 11 lots.
Yeah, if we get a severe snow winter.
Wheeler Ranch. They're on the back of Wheeler Ranch.
No, this is if you were going east on Kelly View, turn left on Hinkle, it would be on the east corner there. I can't remember the name of the street.
Okay.
Where's the land that's been addressed? Code
page 29.
In which code would that?
The zoning ordinance.
It's in the zoning.
If people have a zoning ordinance in front of them, they'll see Article 6 on page 29 is a chart that describes for each zone the minimums and maximums for lot coverage and side yard setbacks, etc. And when we went over this with the Planning Commission, there was discussion about, well, are these too generous? Are they not generous enough? And so you'll see on page 29 what the Planning Commission is recommending at this time. And I'll just go over the residential ones quickly. In the residential zone, the minimum front yard setback is 20 feet. The minimum side yard is 10. The minimum rear yard is 20. And then there's maximum lot coverage of 50%.
Okay. So you wouldn't have any buildings closer than 20 feet apart, yeah, if you got a
10 feet
on the side.
I thought that was your setback from the property line. It's 10 feet.
No, the front yard setback is from the street. So 20 feet from the street, then your house begins, and then on the side, there would be 10 feet on each side. And then the rear yard.
Yeah, but you're 10 feet from the
property line.
Yes,
so
10 feet from the
feet
property line. 20 feet from the other structure.
20 feet between buildings.
Yep.
That's adequate.
And on the street issue.
Down to 9 feet, that's not adequate.
Okay.
On the street issue, in the land division code, there are provisions talking about what the street development standards would be for new streets, and conversations that we've had with the Planning Commission that this very issue came up, recognizing the fact, at the conclusion of the public hearing, and as the Planning Commission deliberates on everything they heard, they'll direct us specifically what they want in those standards, but they've discussed a lot of the same thing. And just giving you an example, part of the fact is that La Pine is very different than Madras, for example, where curbs make sense in a lot of instances, and sidewalks maybe close to the curb make sense, whereas in La Pine they don't, they just for snow removal and the like. So that was very much something that we had conversations on.
Yes.
Sir, I'm thinking here to address Charles Williams.
Mm-hmm.
I live at 51879 Holland's Head Place in Crescent Creek in La Pine. And I just by accident happened to get an interest in this meeting. I saw it advertised and I looked on the internet to look at the codes out of curiosity and noticed the setbacks. That's the first thing I looked at. And the reason is because I moved here in 2005 And for several years before that, I lived in Southern Oregon and was involved in a situation where I had to take a piece of property, have it annexed into the city, have it rezoned, have it subdivided, had it replatted, and had to partition lots off and do everything. I appeared before the city council many times. And so I became inadvertently an expert on this. We actually changed laws in Southern Oregon because of some of the problems I ran into.
Mm-hmm.
But as a result, I realized when I started looking at your work, which is quite voluminous, I realized that really the only thing that's important to a developer, the most important thing, I should say, not the only thing, is the setbacks. That is critical to the kind of house you can build, the size lot you have to have, how much money you have to put in, how it divides into infrastructure and everything. The setbacks are critical.
Yep.
I was involved in Talent for a short time looking at some real estate, and they had put in a setback of 10 feet, side setback of 10 feet. It was a major stumbling block for most of the developers in the area because of the cost of land. And subdivisions were being held up for years trying to deal with getting a variance in order to be able to build enough houses on the property to afford to do the subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
Because 10-foot setback meant 20 feet between houses, mm-hmm. and that meant everything was expanded enormously. The cost did not pencil out, and they couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I became curious. Number one, I looked at the setbacks that you have for residential houses, especially the side setback.
Mm-hmm.
First thing I noticed in a little bit of research was that the county, when the county set the requirements for Lapine, because they have a separate code for Lapine, they actually had side setbacks 30% less than what you're suggesting. And this was before they were looking at Lapine as a city. They were simply looking at Lapine as what we are, you know, which was, at that time was a somewhat rural development. They had a total of 15-foot setback, both sides combined, a minimum of 5 feet on each side. So that's a total of 15 feet. Now we're talking 20 feet setback. I live in Crescent Creek, which is a very nice subdivision. If these rules, the side setback was put in force in Crescent Creek, 1/4 of the houses that now exist there would be illegal,
mm-hmm.
and the developer would have to get a variance to do that.
Mm-hmm.
One quarter of the currently built homes have about 5 foot setback on the side setbacks.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly, Crescent Creek is within the county new neighborhood.
And
you have different standards there that are not the same as what are being proposed here. So the current standards for the large neighborhood area would remain. So the county standards that are in place now, the Planning Commission just reviewed tonight, would stay in effect.
Okay.
They would not be what is going to be recommended for the rest of the community. So I want to make sure that that's clear.
Okay, well, that's helpful. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
And because of the plats that are already filed for the next 3/4 to be developed, at least 1/3 of the homes would be illegal based on your standard. And you might consider the fact that this was a development that was planned by a developer who knew the costs of developing and knew what he needed to do in order to, you have to realize a smaller lot is a more affordable house.
Mm-hmm.
A more affordable house means people can, you know, the lower level of people can purchase these rather than big, more expensive homes.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to see your city develop, just the city now, not the rest of the area around here, but the city, you're going to have to allow, set up standards that are going to be appealing to people who want to develop them and provide the housing that you're going to need in the city, concentrated in the city part. So I just think that's something you really need to consider. I think that, and as you say, this area has been exempt. It would throw the whole development of this area off based on current plans, mm-hmm. if we follow the 10-foot setback between, on the side setback. That's my only point.
And we've heard from a variety of the community. It leans to larger setbacks, but still recognizing that the new neighborhood has some commitments already in place, and we want to honor those. But the rest of the community has come forward, and just like Mr. Shields has talked about, wait a minute, we need to be thinking a little differently in some of these areas that rely on a little more separation of uses.
I just hope it doesn't come back to haunt you someday.
Oh, you never know in planning.
Appreciate the comments. Anything else? gentleman in the back.
Mr. Chair, I'm John Jennings. I'm with the Department of Land Conservation Development. Thank you. I'm down here to observe this evening. I think this is an exciting process. I'm pleased to see the energy and turnout that's here. And, you know, like I said, we're very interested in helping the city work through its establishment of the planning program. I think you've done yourself a favor with selecting a couple real good consultants. And we'll be in touch with them. And so, again, I'm just kind of here to watch and learn tonight. Frankly, I'm glad I did. The setback caught my eye, too. Had I not come down here this evening and heard this discussion, I still have kind of been wondering what that was about. But now I have a better sense of what the folks were thinking, what was in their mind. So, again, that's you know, kind of the value showing up. So that's kind of what we're hoping to take advantage of here. Thank you.
Yeah, those of us that live in Lapine, we're always, you know, we spent about 9 months getting ready for winter. I mean, that's, you know, you gotta go out and chop your wood, you know, and cover everything and get it, you know. And so basically, that winter is always looming ahead. And so we're always planning for that winter. And I enjoy my summers and all that, but I do say I've spent a fair amount of time preparing for winter in Lapine. Thank you, John. And we've got to have more comments on this. I mean, somebody just... Linda Crew.
Yes, I was wondering, these setbacks are applicable after the 16-foot right-of-way from the center lane of the road. Is that...
After 16-foot right-of-way, yeah. What they're talking about is property line.
The actual property
line. Yeah, your actual property line. And so now from your line, not from an easement or whatever, but from your property line, all the land you have control within your line, that from there is your setback to your structure.
Okay, I also, we have adjoining lots together, and I noticed in here it said something about the setbacks don't apply if the two lots are adjoining. Mm-hmm. They're going to be considered as one lot?
Yeah, we have some language in there about lot consolidation, and if somebody was going to build a home, if the home crossed that line or you consolidated the lot, the setbacks would apply from the perimeter. So, you know, it's a real sensible approach. And we have some language in here. I'm not exactly
if
sure.
If you consolidate those lots. If you have not, and they're separate lots, then they're separate. Then build the same on each one. The setback would apply on each one, just as if they were different owners.
Yes.
Let me add something right here, too. There would be concern, I know it would be with me, that we develop all these codes and all that. And then we go to the next day, and now we have a whole new set of zoning ordinances. And oops, my garage that's been there for a long time is like 15 feet, and it's supposed to be 20. Am I going to tear that down and the city's going to make me build a new one? Absolutely not. We've had a lot of discussion on just plain old reality, folks. We're not going to change Lapine overnight. What's going to happen is the old buildings are naturally going to be grandfathered in. They're going to be what's called, in with today's code, they're going to be in a non-conforming use, because under today's code now, they're non-conforming. All right? You still live and breathe and dance around in that building, whatever you want to do. When you go to develop your next property over next door, when you go to add on to your house, when you go to change that usage or that building, then today's code comes into play. Think about that as you tell your friends, please, that you know, that all we need is to panic that everybody move out of time. Because which... Actually, if you study Deschutes County's codes, you're going to find a little more liberality with Lapine City's codes if you see the details in these. I'll swear right now on this gavel or whatever. Oh, that's the way it is. We have taken, what we have tried to do is taken codes that work in different places, not just Deschutes County, but all over the country. This staff has worked, done a lot of research on this, and we've said, does this work in other places? Yes, this works. Does it work in La Pine? No, we need to change it. So you're going to see some changes from Deschutes County in these codes that are, allow a little more space. And with the help of John back here with DLDC, we might get approval on new codes and such to allow for more space. The state would like to see a little less sizing in some of our lots, but you know, we're going to work through all this and we're going to come up with something that is unique for La Pine. La Pine is very unique, and we're going to come up with a product that will work with you folks' help, and we need some more comments. Yes.
Hi, I'm Mark Halverson, and I own five different pieces in La Pine. I've been a resident of the area, not so much La Pine, but Three Rivers South, and for 35 years. I'm president of the Center for Business Park Association. I'm co-owner of Mavericks. It's an athletic 30,000 square foot club in Sun River. And so, kind of well vested in the area, and really want to see, I like what I'm seeing tonight in attending, so I'm glad I was here. I just have some questions, or I guess some issues with some of the zoning that I'm looking at in the commercial and the mixed use commercial zone. Because we kind of ran into that business park after we worked with Deschutes County on placing that. What are permitted uses versus conditional uses, and it can be a real stumbling block. And so sometimes you learn from other people's mistakes and whatnot, or what they've done. And I looked up the city of Bend's zoning for those same type of areas and uses that are permitted there, whereas some of ours are like permitting 15, they permit 28. They get very definitive as to what types of uses are there. And I think that I'd really encourage, before this gets adopted, that we take a look at some of these, because it's one to where me, because of the athletic club and stuff that I look at here, is a principal use that would be allowed is public non-commercial parks and recreation. So you wouldn't see a Sisters Athletic Club or a Band Athletic Club or what we call Mavericks at Sun River here in town. It's not a permitted use, and I think La Pine really, we talk about the winners being along with you guys. Mm-hmm. We as adults and the kids that are growing up here need entertainment. We need things to do. We need an indoor swimming pool. We need
large covered structures.
And
it may be the matter of naming. We have personal and health service establishments in the commercial zone, and it may be that we need to add more language. Athletic club, if it's cleaner and more direct, we can certainly do that. But it was intended to be allowed in the commercial and mixed-use areas.
Yeah, because it clearly states non-commercial parks and recreation, and so I think if I came in today and wanted to build something over on Bonnie Way like that, I'm not advocating I'm going to be doing that, but if I wanted to, I really have a struggle getting through on a permitted use, and I don't think that's the intent.
We can clarify.
Yeah, I think that would be good.
On that note, too, I guess, is oftentimes when used to work at the city of Bend, and when they rewrote the code, what happened was we took a bigger list and tried to consolidate it down to general terms, so that when somebody came in with something, you know, as uses and ideas change over a period of years, that you could fit an idea into a more liberally stated idea.
Sure.
So, but oftentimes, but I appreciate that it doesn't. It's not clear to any individual or some individuals as to how to fix it there. So,
okay.
Thank you.
You're
very
right.
Much.
Mm-hmm. And then the other one that I saw that wasn't in there, it says clubs and lodges, but it doesn't really, in the commercial zone, it would not allow the hotel motel That's over, I think, in the mixed use zone. And we know we have hotels and motels right now, and I would hate to see it just get restricted if somebody came along and wanted to do some sort of facility like a, you know, we've got a beautiful Best Western up there by Wickiup Junction, but as the pine grows and just numbers grow, transient lodging like that also increases. So
that's a good call. We missed that one.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yep.
Very good.
Yeah, we have it in the mixed use, but we missed it in the content. Okay.
Is that all, Mark?
I think I'm done, although I'm not always really good at jumping on right away. Is this hearing open for X amount of days afterwards for sending a written comment, or is this pretty much the public hearing tonight?
Well, we're going to talk about that. We had planned to kind of analyze how many people were here tonight, and if we could answer questions tonight, then we could leave the record open for written comment for a certain period of time and close the oral part of the hearing. If we had numerous questions that couldn't be answered tonight, then we'd want to continue the public hearing to a date certain. But
could we leave the record open for written comments for 7 days?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, would that work? That'd be enough time. Does that fall on our guidelines though, on the time limit?
What we want to do tonight is get as much public testimony as possible. If we exhaust that
Tuesday,
then we're done with the hearing and we can finalize the work with your deliberations.
At a subsequent meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Do we really leave the written record open?
Yes. We should.
I'm suggesting today is the 17th until the 29th. Next week is a holiday week.
Yep.
That's the Monday after the holiday weekend, so it gives the rest of this week and all of next week and the weekend. So, and I think that still gives us time to gather that.
As long as we have time, that sounds great to me, because I'd like to review it, you know, again. And
well, just the changes we talked about tonight in your work session.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are things that are different.
Sure.
That people, you know, will want to comment on.
Do you have that? Would it be appropriate to bring those up tonight to the public that's here?
We certainly should do that or have them available on the website for people to review, but it's easy enough to talk about it tonight. Do we have any other people that want to offer comments?
No, we don't.
So you just go and get copies? Or
yeah, the blue sections, just grab
separate
them.
Because if
we don't have a lot of comments, that leaves quite a bit of time to go over some items, and that might be that might work great.
Okay, thank you.
So I think that's a good idea. I would like to ask one more time though, if you have specific comments right now to make before we go into kind of this work session mode, if you will. So individually, do you have any other comments?
I have one question.
Yes, sir.
I don't seem to find anything in there regarding driveways or the stipulation of a single or a circular or anything of that nature.
Driveway construction?
Well, in other words, I've got a lot, an acre lot.
Mm-hmm.
It's 200 and some feet.
Mm-hmm.
Street frontage. My driveway basically goes from one corner to the other corner.
Mm-hmm.
It crosses in front of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a stipulation in there that we only have one driveway, or can we have it? I mean, two entrances.
We haven't stipulated that because the city hasn't gone forward to develop its public work standards yet, and so it's not addressed in the zoning ordinance.
That's fine.
What would you prefer if you were to write this code? You refer to driveways? Two accesses?
Two accesses.
Would you like to have a choice? Either or?
It's still, I'd rather have the two. I have a shop, store, either rooms with natural drift back to one driveway. My garage, which is attached to the house, is on the opposite end of the house, away from that other driveway. Accessibility is better from the north end, the garage, but the south end, the shop. And that's why I've got our two.
Could we get your name, please?
Oh, I'm sorry, Hugh Gobler.
I guess what I'm asking, I mean, a lot of people will prefer the circular guides because of barbies or whatever, it's just easier. So, I would, you know, I would wonder about restricting. I mean,
well, and Gloria, I misspoke. We do have some regulations based on the street type in the Sokol ordinance.
Okay.
And for a local street, it's one.
Okay.
There are good reasons for that because you've got to control access.
Okay.
You know, but hearing that and knowing, for example, like RV needs, things like that, that you have more of in Alpine, again, unique mm-hmm. character as opposed to some other communities, is we could propose some provisions based upon your lot frontage. Mm-hmm. Right. So if you had 50 feet of lot frontage, you'd get one driveway. If you had 300 feet of lot frontage and you had the room, then maybe you'd get two driveway accesses.
Does it make sense?
It's a range.
Somehow leave that to the final approval on the plat,
sure.
You know, because it's gonna depend on the size of the lot and a lot of common sense.
So the range is
just
more appropriate, I think so.
Okay. But not to restrict it to one, you know, and not to be restrictive to a point where it doesn't make sense. I agree with the gentleman, Hugh, if it's a larger lot, you know, give them two access points. It's the same car coming in and out of there, so a traffic study will reveal that it's only one car, he's just taking a loop to his own property.
Did you have another comment? Did you have another comment?
Linda.
Yes, John, I was just wondering if any of the actual zonings within the cities have changed.
Oh, have changed, like zoning have changed.
Residential,
have a staff, you know, go look at the point to the map and say which ones have changed.
The comprehensive plan is the map that's on the far right there. That's what was adopted, and it has land use designations. And it says, here's kind of the type of development we want in that area. And the zoning map, which looks almost the same as that, but it is different, though, implements that map. What we did is we hired that map, which is the proposed zoning map, right next to the existing county zoning map, which is kind of the smaller colored area. And so for comparative purposes, as Chair Thomas was saying about like the zoning code, look at the zoning code, the text of it, and the easiest thing to do is compare it to the county code. What you can do here is compare that map to the county map, and you will see the changes in the designations. And there are some changes. And then when you see the property's been changed from one designation to another, then you really just have to match it up with the code itself. But what I can tell you is in areas where there have been changes, it's typically it's more liberal types of changes to allow an expansion of uses that have been allowed. I don't think in any cases we've taken or proposed any property changes that would take commercial or residential or go what is effectively considered backward in terms of a designation.
And I can run through these with you. There are smaller copies available up here.
The other thing that we have done is we've absolutely taken the consideration of what's grandfathered in. What, you know, as you look at going from one day and not having zoning codes to the next day having zoning codes, one consideration we took was that, hey, this use is happening right now. It's very difficult to change that drastically, and if it made sense leave it alone. And that's what we what we've done is we've taken other areas that hey, over the years have changed to, you know, generally from residential to like more commercial use. We've decided to go with the commercial use. Changes like that, like they James said, nothing real drastic like from commercial to residential. We've taken into account what's out there right now. We drove through the pine and we didn't want to change anything drastically. So she can mention, you know, most of the any like major changes that might affect their land.
I'll run through those. And today the zoning is governed by Deschutes County, and we took that into consideration, just as John said, because we didn't want to take uses away from people, but we wanted to reflect upon the goals and policies in the comp plan that said we need mixed use, we need to recognize greater flexibility and protection of open space. So the first thing I want to point out are these emerald green areas. And right now, they're the primary linkages to large swaths of open space. This is Roslyn Park. This is a proposed wayside. A significant acreage that links a 500-foot swath through the new neighborhood to other areas that have open space linkages. The important thing is to look at the assets that the community has and be able to link those so people don't have to get in their cars. They can walk or bike or whatever, getting through those different areas. So up here is Cable Subdivision, still residential. In Wikiup, this is now mixed use, which provides greater flexibility and a recognition that we have a mix of uses there already. You'll see some mixed use areas along the transportation corridors, because one of the things we heard in public comment is that it's absolutely necessary to start blending uses, that there shouldn't be a strict demarcation line between one density and another. So these crosshatched areas are what we call transition overlay zones, and they provide buffers and different areas where a mix of uses can occur. Down in this area, and this is our major industrial area, we have, a transitional overlay zone that blends the higher impact area of industrial to the yellow, which is residential. And then you can see the park that's already there. And then we have in this area the crosshatched area, which is the transition area overlay. We've also put on this map the floodplain overlay zone 2, because that's a significant feature that affects La Pine. And so we want people in La Pine, when they look at the zoning map, to be aware of that right away. We've also identified the three neighborhoods that were part of the contest that the community had for identifying the three primary neighborhoods. That was important because the comprehensive plan said, look, we want a complete community, and it's going to be made of complete neighborhoods, and each of those neighborhoods have to have services, open space, opportunities for a range of commercial and residential opportunities, and each one is named. Roslyn Crossing is the first one, Ranchside Neighborhood, and then Prairie Meadow. And we've also identified in this red cross-hatched area what we call the wildfire interface zone. And this is also a multi-use area. We recognize that we have to deal with wildfire from that side of the community. It's also the area where we're expecting a large land transfer from the BLM for future sewer expansion purposes, as well as energy production, so that these are multiple use lands. What am I missing, James?
One other area, it's the white blue area on the bottom. Yep. This used to be all single family residential that abutted the commercial zone. So theoretically, you could have, you know, a restaurant, an office building backing up to your single family residence backyard. And that is now a commercial residential mixed use zone. So that, again, you get a transition between the hard edge of commercial and the hard edge of single family residential to maybe you have a live work scenario where you could potentially have an office on the ground floor and some residential up above, so that it's not that harsh border. You have a blending of uses that provides a smoother transition. So those are the things, you know, so for example, where we say, you know, people always tend to think that commercial you know, you don't go, think of it backward as in terms of property value or something like that if you're residential. That's something where we took residential property and actually made it more flexible by still allowing the residential, but allowing some level of commercial to occur there too. But basically for compatibility purposes so that you had some transition.
And because there is more commercial in that area anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
This Lapine Wayside was an important feature. We had a small work session on how this could look. And one of the key elements that we heard in the comprehensive plan process was that people in Lapine wanted to capture economic development. And we have a lot of trips that occur on the highway. How do we capture people before they go to Bend for their RV and hotel needs? And this wayside provides an activity area, an RV potential, outdoor activity areas, and a way to provide services that's not reliant on the downtown core. So for the traveling public, they will have access and linkages to other open space areas throughout the community. And the river's right here. So you can see how the local assets are being linked up. Oh, last thing. The major Wickiup overpass is in this area, and we've identified the ODOT right-of-way. They will be purchasing more to do those overpasses and the approaches. We just don't know how much. So, any questions on the map?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am.
I live at 51473 Hinkle Way, which is right on the corner of William Foss and Hinkle.
Okay.
And on your zoning plan that was posted on your website, my two lots there that adjoin each other were listed in the color of residential, and now they have turned purple, which means traditional commercial.
Right here?
Yes.
Okay.
I do believe that's it.
And that might have been, well?
That's what's on the comp.
Yeah, let me check the comp plan to see if that is a mapping error. It's still purple. Right there?
Uh-huh.
Okay. And you think that's different from the map that's being proposed now?
It was different than what was on your website.
Okay. All right, we'll check on that. Your zoning today is residential?
I believe it is.
Okay. Let me get your address again, Linton.
51473 Hinkle Way.
Okay.
That's it.
And the adjoining lot, which faces, it's a William Foss address now.
Okay. And what's your phone number, Alana?
541-536-2257.
So, Linda, that's those two little lots right there on that corner?
Yes, the two small lots.
Right there on that corner.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's traditional commercial.
Now, does that mean that I would not be able to put a residence on my...
No, absolutely not. You could build a residence on it. Traditional commercial, oh boy, that'll increase your value quite a bit there. I think I would leave that purple on.
What is the significance differences? Say if I wanted to put a small manufactured home on that lot, what would the differences be between it being commercial and residential? Would there be different setbacks,
First thing we want to figure out is if there's a mapping error. And if you were residential before, you're probably going to be residential after. But if it wasn't, you know, we need to verify your current zoning so that we don't have a discrepancy.
No,
see, we're looking at a 20-year kind of forecast here also. And what we're looking at, basically, I'll just tell you through our process, you know, what we were realizing that happens in reality is that when towns grow and such, you get lots that just abut these main travel routes, and then what happens is they're more traffic there, and they become more kind of commercial uses, and then what it does is it traditionally pushes back residential, you know, back in the forest. But John, I'll tell you here, we've got to contain our sprawl also. So, you know, when you try to push too far up in the residential in the forest, then the DLDC comes on. No, I'm just kidding. But what happens is that, you know, that would make sense, you being actually abutted to, you know, what will become in the future a main travel route. I mean, I realize now it doesn't look like a much of a travel route, but it will in the future. There'll be a lot of traffic coming down that road.
Hopefully not.
Well, it's fact of life. I mean, we, you know, can you imagine?
It's industrial.
It's just what happens. I mean, we can sit here and opine all we want and go, you know, the rest of, we got our piece of paradise, the rest of the world can stay away. But you know what?
I didn't.
And you know, I'm looking at the ages of this group in here right now, and I'm thinking 20 years from now, these teenagers are going to have a heyday in La Pine. You know what I'm saying?
You want to know what it was like in 43?
No, absolutely not. I've always thought I was going 100 years too late. All this stuff makes me sick. I just want to do whatever I want with my property. I'm full land use.
James has
a question. I remember as we go back through the mapping that we did on the comprehensive plan,
right,
going back a year and a half ago, two years ago, the property, the existing zoning and comprehensive plan designation on the county's map across the street to the north of you, it was zoned commercial.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we went through that, for the reasons as far as the transportation corridor goes and for a blending of the uses across the street from one another, is the properties on the south side, which are your properties, in the same terminus as you go to the east, were designated commercial on the comprehensive plan. So it was with forethought that those properties, as we went through the comprehensive plan process, that were designated commercial. But as you go through the use of the list of uses, again, I mean, you could build a single-family residence on there as you can today, and many of the uses that you could do in the single-family residential zone are allowed, but with the expansion of a lot of commercial uses as well.
Yeah, if I may make another comment, I know it's just it's a block away, then it goes back down to a commercial residence mixed use. So that application you were just speaking of doesn't necessarily apply in that sense.
What application? You're talking about that transition area, the crosshair?
Right, right. It's the light blue section, which is commercial residential. Mm-hmm. I believe that's what we are now zoned, is commercial residential.
Mm-hmm.
So again, this may be a map error, or if you're...
We're going to clarify that and call you for sure.
Okay, I just want it duly noted in this meeting.
Absolutely.
I have a question. Will there be any restrictions on putting manufactured or mobile homes on city lots?
We allow mobile home parks in a variety of zones, and one of the things that came up in our hearings is that we needed to have a range of housing choices. So the restrictions, there aren't that many restrictions unless you're a mobile home park. We have manufactured homes and mobile homes allowed as single-family dwellings. I'm not sure if we have anything
so
special.
Not a park, but if you were to buy a lot in a residential area, would you be able to put a manufactured home, because many cities don't allow it.
We're not restricting it, although there are some subdivisions that already have CC&Rs that would trump our zoning ordinance.
Okay.
And so you'll have some of that in various subdivisions throughout the community.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not restricting it.
Mm-hmm. No.
Vicki has a question.
Vicki.
Well, I got a couple questions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, reading this a little bit, if you guys are going into vacant land and creating new subdivisions and having all those nice rules, it'd be fine, but it looks like you're going to be going in with the city of La Pine, these people that have been having their houses and their farm animals and their runs and everything, and I think you said that they would be grandfathered in,
mm-hmm.
but then if they wanted to build like another structure, then would they have to comply to all this?
They are in a non-conforming use is what it's called, and, mm-hmm. and you can add on a non-conforming use.
You're talking about the animals specifically.
Well, no, I haven't gotten the animals yet. Okay. That's another thing I want to ask about. But just like, well, a lot of these people, they have stuff all over. I mean, mm-hmm. unless they want to build a little shop or something, right. Would they have to comply then?
Quite possibly.
There's a structure and then mm-hmm. there's a use. And you can build something that you call a shop or something that you call a barn, but how you use it is a totally different thing. So if your question is if somebody wanted to build another structure on their mm-hmm. property, an accessory structure, they can do that. It has to meet setbacks, building code requirements, all those things. But then how they use that structure, if they're just storing, say, machinery in there, lawnmowers, things like that, cars, that's one thing. If they're raising animals or they're running a restaurant out of there or have a commercial kitchen that they're producing something, that gets into a whole different element. It's the use of the structure and the property versus the actual construction and type of building that it is. So
only that
you can build things, but right. how you use it is a whole different.
So it only applies to that structure of following the rules, the mm-hmm. ordinances here.
Correct.
Okay, and then I really think on the animal raising, mm-hmm. you're limiting to two, like horses to an acre, mm-hmm. or chickens, yeah. and then it says properties that do not comply have 6 months from the day this adoption is going to remove the animals.
Yes.
So you're going to have a whole bunch of very unhappy people. I don't have horses. I have other animals. I mean, if you guys drove around the pine and sit behind and started looking, you know, when you know your ordinance, you're going to have a lot of changes, but just the animal factor. So are you going to have a letter go out to everybody that has more than two animals? I mean, how are you going to approach this? Because, as I said, if you were going into a brand new subdivision and creating these rules, it would be great because everybody would have to follow the rules. But you've got people here, the reason why they moved here was for the freedom. And I think you guys might want to move from your house now, because if you put your name on this, you're going to have people that are going to be very unhappy. But how, I mean, I just...
It was a product of extensive discussion.
Uh-huh.
Even at the council level, we heard concerns about too many animals on one lot. We've had a lot of complaints come into the city about too many animals within a neighborhood. And so the Planning Commission had extensive discussion, I think it was over two or three meetings,
mm-hmm.
about this particular issue. And it was decided that these restrictions on page 44 were generous enough to deal with the issue, but in a firm way, because we heard so many people say, you know, this was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 6 months to remedy the problem, if somebody needed more time, that Planning Commission also would give lenience to through each situation.
Now, we understand that... You can't enforce these procedures, you know, overnight. It takes time. Answer your question, Vicki. These ordinances are much more generous than what these people are under right now. Here's what's happening, though, is Deschutes County is not enforcing the ordinance.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
If you have five horses on your acre right now and you're within the Lapine city limits, we have an intergovernmental agreement with Deschutes County to handle a building planning department within the city limits. They don't have the manpower, the resources right now to enforce codes in Lapine. So. Let me just say it plain out. These people are getting away with something they shouldn't right now, okay? Because that happens, because, you know, for 2 years you've been getting away with it, doesn't make it right, no. So what will happen is Lapine is developing generous codes that say up to two horses. I think in the county, isn't it 1.5 horse? I've never understood how you get a half horse.
It's
like a 1/2 horse per acre, right? You know, 1 lb. Because we know what she catches once in a half. So I think ours makes a lot more sense than this one's got. But in any case, what will happen in reality is overnight, boom, we have a new code in Lapine. Excellent. Now how do you enforce it? In the next few years, we will be developing a code enforcement officer. And hopefully that person's about 6'9" and about 3 pounds, whatever. And I don't know if he'll be armed or not. Don't pass any rumors. But anyway, then we begin to enforce them. And letters will go out. We talked about our enforcement a little bit. And it's going to be as humane as possible.
But we talked about
the
exceptions to language and for hardships.
We will look at each individual case. And if there's clearly violations, we're going to send Guido out there to start the conversation to get the pine cleaned up. Because I think everybody agrees that we've done away, we've done too long without any kind of control, and we see the result of that. And so it'll take a few years, but encourage that person out there with the 5 horses that, he's all right for now, but he better start looking around for a home for the other 3, because in the next few years, he might have to put them somewhere.
Plus, I think the Humane Society, I don't know if you guys would know if there's more, if they're more lackadaisical with how many horses they allow on an acre. I'm not really sure.
I don't know. I know that the complaints we've heard were extreme, and I don't want to go into detail, but everything from malnutrition to manure being, deposited in the street right of way. I mean, some really horrible things. So we have to have some codes to regulate it, and this is a place to start. We started in the first draft much more restrictive than this, and the Farming Commission said, no, we need to have more time. And that's where the 6 months came from.
And the number of animals. And the size of the lot. But we realize this is a rural area. So we're not saying we're not going to allow any horses in the city. We're not going to allow any chickens. We just want to limit the numbers based on your lot size. You're welcome.
Don? Don Brian, I live in Crescent Creek. I was here during a lot of those conversations, and I think the big response was animal abuse, because as you drive through this area and you see the large number of animals, more than is reasonable on a piece of property, and see how they're cared for, and or not cared for, I should say, and that was one of the things that was brought up by not just one, but several people, and I think the Planning Commission's response is very, very reasonable. Thank you.
Sir.
My name is Bob Reed, and I have a piece of property on Reed Road, and the zoning, I think right now it's zoned in industrial. If I have somebody, an investor or somebody that comes by and wants to put a commercial thing in there, can that be changed? Or I need to talk about that now.
We should talk about that. Mm-hmm. On page 23 of the code, you'll see uses that are allowed in the I zone or the industrial zone. And one thing that we did talk about at the Planning Commission, was how do you deal with commercial uses? It's a big deal right now to make sure that industrial lands are preserved for economic development, and commercial uses go in the commercial zone, and for industrial you need to be sensitive to preserving those for industrial uses. So what we ended up recommending is that if you have a retail function, for example, if you manufacture widgets and you want to sell those widgets on site, the retail area must occupy less than 50% of the building, so that it's not the majority of the use. It's subordinate to the primary industrial use, which produces the product or the widgets, but it's not the primary use. And the reason for that is to make sure we keep industrial lands for industrial uses.
Well, right now, I border where there's two restaurants, service station and a
motel.
And a motel. And on the other side of me, which is also in industrial, there's a feed store. And I think it probably should be in commercial.
Can you show me on the map where that is?
This piece right here.
Okay, so on our new map, let me see. So it's right in here. In this industrial.
This piece right here, this side,
that's right next to commercial.
Yeah, that's the service station here, and the fast food there, motel there, feed store here.
Okay, so we have commercial in the right zone, so that's in the commercial zone in the purple. The feed store could be classified as an industrial use, I believe.
Yeah.
I think we have feed stores here somewhere. Yeah, we have agricultural processing, so we could add feed stores to industrial. That's not unusual in an industrial zone.
Can this be changed to industrial? Can't mine be changed to that?
To you're over here?
No, this is mine right here.
Okay, you're industrial now?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm asking about the change.
And your proposal is to change that to commercial?
Or not so if it's, unless this investor came along and wanted to buy or lease or whatever, is it easy for him to change that from one to the other?
He would have to go through a zone change. So right now, you're industrial.
So what you're saying is it's a considerable amount more money to...
There's a process and a fee. We don't know exactly what the fee is. But right now, the comprehensive plan and everything that we've talked about has looked at that property as industrial. Some of the uses that you talked about would be fine in the industrial zone. I'm not talking about any uses
because I don't know what use it might be, but I'm just under those considerations. I don't know if you might come along and I don't mind. I probably won't be building it myself. I'll probably either lease or sell it. And whoever wants to come in and
We need to have some order so I can hear him.
Excuse me, please. Okay.
What this gentleman's talking about is he'd like to have his property zoned a different zone. And our comprehensive plan, which was several years in the making, looked at these properties and didn't do what you wanted it to do. It made it industrial, not commercial. If a person wanted to change that zone, say a future purchaser of your property or a developer, he'd have to go through a process and look at the comprehensive plan, look at the inventory of industrial lands and commercial lands, and give the city good reasons why that should be changed. Right now, I wouldn't recommend any changes because of the work that was done on the comprehensive plan so far. But his comment should be noted, Joe.
Let's look at the property that borders Mitt's Way. It looks like a 2.5-acre parcel that is home to the Pine Storage, I believe. Corner of Reed and Mitt's Way. Let's look at that property and let's figure out where in our plan does the store, storage facilities, where do we have storage facilities associated with either commercial or industrial?
Is that your question, John?
That's my question to the staff, yeah.
Yeah.
Where do we have storage facilities?
Like mini storage?
Yeah, mini storages.
Okay. We talked about it for mixed use and commercial and industrial.
Mixed use, commercial and industrial.
We have storage and distribution.
And that's where we could be more specific and say mini storage.
Mini storages, yeah, because that's what everybody associates with it.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm trying to get to the point here. So we have a pine feed and tack. It could be either commercial or industrial, right?
Could be either one.
Yes. And you often find them in industrial zones because they have bulky merchandise, because they often warehouse large amounts of feed. It's not unusual to have them in industrial zones.
Is that lot still a bare lot, Bob?
Yes.
Bare lot?
Yeah.
You know, that is a very unique piece of property, staff, because of the fact that when I look on this map, it is absolutely the closest industrial piece of property to Highway 97. Mm.
Yep.
I think we need to take a closer look at this.
Okay.
Well, especially commercials on the north side of that,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. Mixed use.
Let's be mindful that these zone designations started with the comprehensive plan process.
Mm-hmm.
That was a product of looking at inventories of industrial
mm-hmm.
and commercial land,
right.
and to change them.
We've taken 5 acres out of industrial.
Yeah, we would be doing something that would be inconsistent with the comprehensive plan. There's a separate process that could be done to do that. You could also, if you made a change now, you'd have to have extensive findings on why you wouldn't change this for anybody who wanted to go from industrial to commercial.
Yeah.
So it's really important to make sure.
I thought that was what the meeting was all about, to have these changes made now instead of later.
In some ways, some of the things can be changed, but it's a matter of the process on how you do it. Virginia, you had a question for me.
I do, because we had discussed in our meeting that the business park is currently listed as industrial, but they advertise light industrial commercial on their sign.
Right.
And so this would actually be on that side, coming towards 97, would be similar use as the business park.
This is the property in question.
I understand. Well, here's the business park, right? Isn't this the business park?
Yeah.
And this, they advertised for the county that it's light industrial commercial. Cool. They had a hair salon in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. So I'm just saying, when we had discussed making a light industrial area designation, I didn't know that we couldn't do that.
You can do that.
Okay, so that's why I'm saying, if we went this way, starting here, this is the heavy industrial, this is light industrial / commercial, and he would be included in that. Doesn't that make sense? Because the business park is near enough to you that it could be designated that.
So
in my mind, it makes sense, because I thought we were discussing having specifically some designation for the business park that would allow some commercial usage in there.
Well, certainly light industrial,
because it's right next to
the makes sense, because it's right next to the highway.
Okay, so what you're recommending is that we take the industrial zone right now, and for a specific area, make that light industrial
mm-hmm.
with new uses to be determined.
Right, because it will coincide with the industrial park. They have their own zoning, right? I mean, they don't even comply with. I mean, they will with the cities, but right now the industrial park has their own separations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right now we just have, in the code, we just have one industrial.
We just have one industrial.
Right, but they advertise it as, you know, they've divided it light industrial, heavy. And Rick spoke to this too, you know, one of our meetings we talked about having.
We'd be good on the inventory and the work done to date if we keep it industrial and do what you're talking about, which is create light industrial, which is more flexible than the current industrial.
I thought that's what we did.
Would that satisfy you, Bob?
I think so, because
let's look at that.
Here with not knowing what some investor might want.
Let's look at that.
You'd have more options, I would say.
All right.
Because we talked about maybe a tax
increase
or, you know, different people.
Let's put closure to this right now. Our staff is going to look at that. In the next revision, pay attention to it and watch this to come down. And let's look at that and see if that doesn't end up being light industrial as a separation in our final draft, okay? Yeah, I'm going to leave that to you to pay attention, because I've been looking at a lot of different things, and that's one little tiny little dot that I'm looking at. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So just pay attention to that, Bob, and come to the next meeting. All right? Staff, you okay with it?
Procedurally, as to the map change is one thing, but then what we're doing is we're creating a separate zoning designation and section of the code. Mm-hmm. So we can do that. It's fairly simple. But in terms of you were asking a question about leaving the record open, at this point we'd have to continue the hearing, formally continue the public hearing so that the public can come back and comment on it orally.
Okay.
So that's just like that would be the issue.
Yeah.
So instead of you were going to continue to...
Because it is right next to a residential.
Yeah.
And that's...
And that makes more sense.
That'll work for me then.
Well, it's my understanding there's 40 acres that is designated as light industrial. So you might want to talk to them and find out.
They may have their own advertising.
There's a sign that advertises light industrial.
That's the one right here, yeah.
And we considered it one zone, but you're directing us to split it out, and it's still industrial, so it doesn't mess with the inventory.
I have a question.
Adele.
I would like to know what the rationale was to designate that area as heavy industrial in the first place.
Oh, that 40 acres right there?
That's existing.
It's historical.
Industrial
so
the county
then it
well.
Was. So that's how the county had it designated?
Yeah.
Okay. And
they originally did
inventory.
That because when they sold the lots, the intention was that it would generate family-raised jobs. And before you could sell a property, you couldn't buy it as an investment. I sold a couple of those and tried to buy some, but then they wouldn't allow us to buy them as investment. They wanted you to buy it, so you built a facility to create jobs in the city of Lapine, or then before the city, create jobs for Lapine area. Mm-hmm. And so you weren't just flipping them over and making money on the flip. You were doing it to create jobs for the community. Mm-hmm. That's what they were doing.
And we had to have so many acres that were designated as industrial. So that's where that's the main part of it is.
Mm-hmm. And just to clarify, so redesignating that light industrial will give more flexibility to that area.
Yeah, it's going to blend commercial uses into what had been strictly more industrial. And even though it's still a light industrial, what we'll do is we'll come back with a range of choices and a range of uses that will be allowed in that zone. And you'll want to attend the next meeting so that you can see what we've done and how we participate.
I'll be notified of one or another.
We're going to tell you tonight when the meeting is continued.
Yeah, that'll be a continued, just like this meeting we just went home and came back. It'll be a continuous. Okay, any other... Did I see somebody else's hand?
Could I just ask?
Go ahead, Mark.
I know there was some talk from ODOT to relocate the highway around the Wiggy Up Junction. Yeah. Is that conversation still taking place, or has that been...
Yeah,
that
it's ongoing.
Yeah. It falls in with that interchange work there, Mark, on up there at Burgess and Highway 97. And basically, it came through Lapine just as it is right now. And sorry, I don't have a copy of it. I think it's at home. What it did, Mark, is it came right straight through here. The interchange being here, and what it did is it started to cut over just a little bit through here, comes through our nice little wayside, we're going to have to deal with that later, and comes through here. Here, we had a couple different plans. One was to go around here like this, one was to just do an interchange, come back about right in here. So, but it involved just this strip right through there. It's not that... Remember the 20-year plan that went completely around from Highway 31 and goes all the way around the Pine, cuts through Darlene Way there somewhere. The big Lapine Parkway. That's not a new rumor, right?
Pine Parkway, 20-year plan.
Can I have
everybody go on and tell somebody?
One item on that, one note on that item is that on the comprehensive plan, we have a big red circle. And we call that the Wakey Up Interchange area. And in the text of the comprehensive plan, what we've discussed is essentially, even though you have some zoning designations that are there today and you can develop under those designations, is there's a big statement in there that says this may change in the future depending upon what ODOT does because they haven't finalized the plan yet. So.
And the, it's actually, it's at about 2 to 4 year possibility on time frame. It's in Congress right now, and it falls under the ODOT's priority list, which changes daily. So, but that could be 2 to 4 years. You could start seeing it breaking around. It's pretty exciting. And I hope they hurry up and do it because we need to plan for it. And not leave it out for the next 20 years. You know?
Is that where they were going to put an overpass over the track?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, overpass over the track and underpass. You come to Burgess and you go underneath the highway and then you circle back around and then it's quite a cloverleaf. Well, not quite cloverleaf, maybe half a cloverleaf. But it'd be big news for the Pine, I know that. At the tune of what was the money?
30 million.
Yeah, 30 million.
Wow.
30 million.
That would bring a few jobs.
Yeah. Maybe it's going to 29 million now. Yeah.
They lowered it to 24.
24? Oh, okay.
Today's late market. Okay.
One more question. I see it looks like here that the ODOT satellite maintenance yard that's on Highway 97 and Reed Road, some 10, 12 years ago they were discussing moving that to the, because it was industrial, considered industrial, from that commercial area into the industrial district. Mm-hmm. Has there been any proceedings on that? I mean, it has been.
We've mentioned that to ODOT that they need to move their facility out of our downtown now, but
yes.
They were there before we were down, so we're in this little struggle right now with that, but absolutely, I believe that needs to happen.
We could make them landscape it, though.
Well, it could be if they open it up, at least allow our kids to slide down the thing in the winter. Help us on this thing. But that's, and I think ODOT, is there anybody from ODOT here, by the way?
Okay, so all that said.
I think they realize that they're in the middle of a city now, and they're probably kind of looking around at where they need to be in the future, I hope. And so we're kind of leaving it at that. Our city manager is having some conversations about that site. As a sewer pivot that is right next to Highway 97, right in the middle of downtown Lapine, that maybe needs to move to the east. So we're working on some things that make some sense. It just takes a while.
Vicki? I just have a question. I don't know if it's possible. If you can run a satellite map around the Pine right now, compare it to the map you have to see how out of touch with what is already there to what you want it to be. I don't know if you've done that.
There are maps such as that. There's satellite maps or at least aerial maps, and we have compared what's used now and what makes sense. And people have, they've developed basically what makes sense here, really, other than we have a big chunk of forest in between two little cities. And really, that's something that will just evolve, it'll just come together, in the future. We're working on that right now. But when you talk about downtown Lapine here and Wickiup Junction up there, we didn't really change too much more on what it is now. We considered all those usages, and so we tried to make common sense with it. And, any other questions? No? Okay, we need to look at a continuance then, huh?
Okay. When you continue a hearing, you directed staff to do some things that will be new information for the public.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need to do that work, do the final cleanup on these ordinances, and then have the changes that you've asked us to do ready 7 days before the next hearing.
Right.
So what I'm looking at is December 15th. And I need to know from Patty.
December 15th?
Yes.
That's been taken.
Well, we can meet in a different room.
Council meeting.
Yeah, just we have
city council meeting, so yeah. There's not going to be the
wow.
Case.
Well, it's hard to have her in two places.
Do we have Thursday?
What about the 16th?
I'm not going to be here. I'm leaving.
Okay,
leaving town.
How about the 14th?
14th, I could do it.
Tuesday, 14th.
And we would be continuing the hearing for the specific issue that was brought up, which is the industrial zone creation and the uses. Everything else, I would recommend that, unless there's other public testimony, we're continuing it on that item alone so we don't have to redo the testimony.
Yep.
But there's still
been very thorough.
Right. We would ask that the written record be left open for 7 days following this hearing.
Okay. Right.
So, 14th, Patty, 14th? You're good on that?
Okay. 14th at 6 p.m.?
Okay, let me restate that. We are continuing the hearing on the specific issue of the creation of a light industrial zone and the proposed uses within. And we will leave this record open for written comment for 7 days from this date, which would be the 24th of November.
Well, you said the 29th because of the holiday. You did say that.
Holiday.
Oh, that's right. The 29th? Oh, sorry.
Well, because
sorry.
Of the holiday next week, so we said written.
Certainly. That's fine.
Monday,
yeah.
29th.
Okay.
Okay.
Now what?
That'll be the 14th, say, of
December 14th, 6 p.m. And right here. If there's nothing further,
we'll continue the hearing.
We will continue this hearing on December 14th at 6 p.m. Folks, have a good evening.